Time for a talk on the wild side. Staff phenologist John Latimer and his buddy Harry Hutchins, forest ecologist, on Tuesday mornings. Harry, good to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, it's time.
Good. You moved up the ranks, my buddy. Good to see you this morning.
I struggled in, but I did it. One thing I wanted to talk about a little bit is, and I taught this for a good 20, 30 years, certainly, because I always taught wildlife management. And I never thought you could really understand wildlife management unless you understood the laws and the history of where we've come from. And this country has a great history of it, and they've done a great job. Unfortunately, we have a leader now that wants to try and dismantle a lot of that. But I think the big thing that people need to know is that back in the early 1900s, a gentleman that was associated with a state close to us, Iowa, and Iowa had a House of Rep named Lacey, and he, along with Teddy Roosevelt, the president at the time, Republican president, and a Republican legislator named Lacey, put together what they called the Antiquities Act. And the reason they did this was because you and I today can go to the Southwest and still find the original Anasazi ruins and the pots that they made. And as the history would say, those sites in the Southwest were being raided by pot hunters from this country and from other countries in Europe. And they come over from Europe and they take these back, all this stuff back to their museums and things like that. And people started noticing that they were doing this, people in the Southwest that were settling there, and certainly the Native Americans. And they were taking away our history and our culture and of the Southwest. And so Lacey put together this Antiquities Act along with President Roosevelt, Teddy, and it gave him the power, and it gave every president after that the power to take little parcels of land. They weren't big national parks, and sometimes these lands, in this case, you didn't have to go through the Senate and the House of Rep and pass this and have it become a big law like a national park does. These were little, smaller areas that people noticed really needed to be saved right away or we were going to lose them. And this was places like Grand Canyon National Park. I think everybody agrees that, boy, it was nice that we were able to put that aside. I don't think there's too much disagreement in this country about that. And so every president except for Ronald Reagan made a national monument. And that's what this Antiquities Act did. And you can still go out there and you can walk on them. You can camp on them. You can, do this and that. You just can't. It's in the way of a national park. It is kind of like that. It's run by the National Park Service. They monitor it. They see what's happening. And they inform you about what there is out there that you can go see and all that kind of thing that a Park Service personnel would do, typically. But, one thing you certainly can, they're not totally locked up and set aside. They're there for our enjoyment, and they wouldn't be there for our enjoyment if it wasn't for Lacey and if it wasn't for Theodore Roosevelt, who set this aside with the Antiquities Act. And so one of the things you're seeing right now that I was alluding to last week is that currently there's a movement on the federal scale by our current president to try and he's listening to one faction of his audience out there, and he's taking seven of these national monuments that were created in the last 20, 25 years, and reducing their size and to you know, as much as 80%. And so 50% in one case, Grand Escalante, and which is in Utah, just a beautiful area. I've had the chance to hike there. And in fact, you know, if you think you can't walk there, you can go on the website of like Backpacker Magazine, and they actually have posted the best hikes to do within these seven, or at least five of these seven national monuments, and say, do it while you still can, because the areas are being reduced. And not only that, I think, John, to me, having taught on the Navajo Indian Reservation for a good 5 years or so, those folks, I mean, they were really going, really realizing they were getting their land back for something they really perceive as very important to their life and their culture, and so it's not just some Anglos that want to go out there and lock it up and make it a place where you can where you can't do anything. You can do a lot there, and it's just a matter of making sure that we don't lose a lot of the Red Rock country, a lot of the animals, and you know, the bigger the better, as I always say, with ecosystems, because they're the ones that those animals. I look around on my land, and I'm fortunate. I have 80 acres in that land. I can see fisher tracks, but a fisher doesn't live on 80 acres. A fisher needs a couple square miles to find all the things it needs for food, water, and cover and stuff, and breeding. And so they just happen to pass around where I own this land at this time. And I'm just fortunate that occasionally they pass through. And they did pass through once this year, but I haven't seen the tracks in several weeks. And it's just, you know, if you can have a pair of bluebirds, if you got 5 acres of land, you can have a pair of great or barred owls if you have 640 acres of land. But, you know, some of these animals need even larger, wolves and things like that. So they need more. And having the requirements for them often requires a pretty big area for some animals. And that's one of the things these natural monuments do. They usually were not set aside for that reason, but they also provide a lot of habitat for a lot of animals.
Yeah, having that uninterrupted habitat is critical. And the animals don't see boundaries. They don't, unless you build a wall, they're not going to be inconvenienced. You know, they'll just find a way around or through or over, and they will do what they have to do. A nice picture on Season Watch of an otter running alongside of a ski trail, which was kind of cool.
Oh, yeah.
And we don't realize the importance of public land up here because we have it. You know, if I said to you, Harry, let's go out and hike, we wouldn't have to drive very far out of town before we would come to land that was just land, and we could park the car alongside the road and get out and hike. If you go to Texas, for example, that's not an opportunity that you'll have. The land there is either private or it's a state park, and those are the only two options you have down there. There are federal parks as well. There are some national parks in Texas, but my point is, there's lots of public land, and public land is just that. It's land for you and me. And if I wanted to drive to Utah and get out of my car and walk around on some of this public land, no one there can stop me.
Yeah.
I can go there and walk on that public land, same as I can do here. And so that makes a huge, huge difference. These public lands are worth protecting, regardless of where they are. Makes a huge difference in a person's life.
It does. And you think about it, John, you know, I don't know about you, but I've had the chance, for example, to go to Mesa Verde and in some of those areas, Chaco Canyon, things like that down in the Southwest, and to be able to see that because someone had the foresight of setting that aside that, you know, if you went there, you probably wouldn't say, well, that's just the greatest place to see great horned owls or spotted owls or something. But you would say, boy, those things are pretty unique, those cliff dwellings, all that stuff. So I just really think that we need to persist and get on our politicians to make sure, because this is all going to court.
Yeah,
this is all going to court, and I've read articles from, you know, we'll see your lawyer here in court about this. Anyways, just I hope people get a chance to continue to enjoy them.
I do too. Thanks, Harry. Harry's a forest ecologist, joins us on Tuesday mornings for a talk on the wild side.